Welcome to Vault 33, a podcast for Amazon Prime's Fallout. We are your hosts, Andrew Sorsini,
Dwayne D,
and Tosin Unafawakin.
We just watched the fifth episode of Fallout called The Past. We assume you have as well. Total spoilers ahead. So let's dive into the after talk. You can follow us on Twitter at FalloutVault33. Add us on iTunes, Spotify, and all the other streaming services. Like us, leave us a review. That's how we get noticed. But of course, really just spread the word. Tell your friends. We want them to like us the way that you like us. This episode was written by Carson Mell and directed by Claire Kilner. Two names that I've never heard before, but I'm sure they're
we
wonderful.
We are well out of the Nolan era of this show.
Exactly.
Now.
Dwayne, why don't you give us a recap of what happened in this episode?
You got it. So we haven't seen the Brotherhood guys for a whole episode. We open up with Thaddeus and Maximus talking after their encounter with the Gulper during episode 3. Thaddeus still believes Maximus is Knight Titus. It's a lot of S's, I'm sorry. And he thanks him for saving his life. He asks for a brand, like a hot brand on his body. And after a little while, Maximus obliges. Once that's done, and Maximus feels more comfortable, Maximus reveals himself to Thaddeus. Thaddeus feels betrayed. And once Maximus knows that Thaddeus is no longer on his side, and that Thaddeus thinks that the Brotherhood will kill him, Maximus tries to get Thaddeus, but Thaddeus is quick and he removes Maximus's fusion core. Taking Wilzig's head and stranding Maximus in his T-60 armor to die. So, sometime later, Lucy comes along and sees the armor. She clears it of giant cockroaches and finds Maximus inside. She doesn't trust him at first, but he gives her radiation medicine and she lets him out of the powered down armor. They agree to work with one another. They will also use the tracker that Lucy put into Wilzig's head to get the head from Thaddeus. And then together, bring Wilzig's head to the Brotherhood for Maximus's sake. And in return, the Brotherhood will help Lucy retrieve her father. Meanwhile, Maximus told Lucy that he is Knight Titus and not actually Maximus. So Lucy and Maximus compare notes as they travel on the railroad tracks toward the head with the tracker that they have. Learning that Maximus was once a denizen of the 34,000-person-strong New California Republic, he survived its destruction via nuclear annihilation and was adopted by the Brotherhood as he emerged from the rubble as a little boy. Meanwhile, in Vault 33, Norm and Chet try to determine why Norm and Lucy's mother's Pip-Boy was used to open Vault 32 from the surface. They find ominous signs that Vault 32 knew they were wronged somehow by Vault 31. The Vault 33 dwellers vote, and Betty wins the election. Norm takes a look at the record of trades between Vaults 31 and 33, and he discovers that all the overseers that have won elections in Vault 33 have been immigrants from Vault 31. Not only that, but it seems that Vault 32 has also always elected overseers from Vault 31. We also learn that Vault 31 is known to have more resources and a better education system than Vault 33. Also, according to Stephanie, the mashed potatoes are better. And we also learn that Vault dwellers prefer Jell-O cake to apple pie. Betty, the new overseer, holds a meeting about the future of Vault 32. The Vault 33 denizens go into Vault 32, and much to our surprise from last week's episode, it's been all but restored. The dead bodies are removed, the blood's cleaned up, the lights are all on. Meanwhile, Lucy and Maximus encounter some other people on the walk, and Maximus has to kill them in self-defense. During the shootout, Maximus is wounded when he's shot in the shoulder. While exploring the remnants of the New California Republic, Lucy realizes that Maximus's wound is pretty grave. She demands they try to find some first aid, and they go into an old Vault Tech research and development lab where they're trapped and dropped down a chute. But next we see them, they're unhurt but bandaged, lying on gurneys. It turns out the trap dropped them into a Vault Tech vault, not unlike Vault 33. And that's the whole episode.
Yeah, short and sweet, like a 45-minute episode. What did you think, Dwayne, of this particular episode in general?
I mean, in general, it was very nice to see Lucy and Maximus interacting with all their flaws. And having been sort of like, you know, both of them have been exposed to the world. Maximus has been confronted with the reality that he's not Knight Titus and that he isn't indestructible in that suit. Mm-hmm. That Thaddeus is out there and he could be in deep doo-doo. And then Lucy, you know, like we said last time, you know, she doesn't trust anybody anymore. And even though she's, you know, about to faint from radiation sickness, she has to learn how to trust Thaddeus. And I think the dynamic on screen was pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm continually impressed with the guy playing. I'm not Thaddeus Maximus. I'm continually impressed with the guy playing Maximus. Mm-hmm. And
Aaron Moten,
yeah. And I just really thought that seeing these two characters sort of, I guess, halfway, or a little bit more than halfway through the series, and just kind of, you know, hey, this is what I've learned so far, and this is how I'm going to try to deal with it. That was cool. You know, it was cool to see that dynamic. And then I was pretty shocked when I saw Vault 32 all set up, right?
Because yeah.
There's only three vaults, right? So, like, Vault 33 didn't do it. Certainly, Betty didn't do it by herself. But if she's in concert with Vault 31 and communication with Vault 31, that means Vault 31, which we know has more resources,
sure,
was able to turn that whole place around inside of a day or two, which is just wild.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Towson, how about yourself? What was your general thoughts about this episode?
It was pretty interesting getting to see Maximus as this kind of smarter character. He's always sort of
bumbling.
He's
never been that bright, yeah.
Yeah, but compared to Lucy, he knows this world, knows the concerns of this world, and is able to kind of guide her through it and explain the issues that they encounter along the way. And so from that perspective, it was interesting seeing him sort of take the lead there. I do appreciate the intrigue and mysteries that we get in this episode, as well as a bit more of the external world building, because this was not as much a character study as some of the previous episodes that we've seen with the ghoul, as was with Lucy, but this was still kind of setting up a lot of that intrigue. So I thought it was okay. Can't complain.
Yeah.
How about yourself, Andy?
I really enjoyed this episode too. This for two reasons, mainly, which is this is the first episode where we've really seen Maximus and Lucy together as a team, you know, with the same goal, on the same path, and not just sort of crossing paths like they did in Philly. So this is them, like, beginning their...
Yeah, in episode 2, they seem to like one another, but they didn't get to actually interact.
Right.
Now we're in
right.
episode 5, and they're actually interacting. And one of the things that we learned quickly was just that, you know, we talked about, like, trust was an issue or whatever.
Yeah.
But Lucy quickly used her skills as kind of a social person to be like, hey, look, we'll get your head back for you, and then you can lend me some knights, and then I can get my dad. And it just felt like, I don't know, it was a feel-good moment.
It was a feel-good moment, yeah. And
it was like that moment in Game of Thrones Season 6 where Sansa and Jon Snow finally see each other for the first time. And they hated each other back in the day, but they're just like, I'm so happy to see you. It was like that for
me. Right. They have both been through ordeals individually, and now they're coming together a little bit more world-weary and informed from the process. But the other thing I liked about this episode was sort of like, you know, this episode scratched a lot of like mystery box itches for me. So like, as you guys know, but maybe some of the people listening to us know, like I'm like, to me, my catnip is like a show like Lost or a show like Westworld, where there's this big mystery box and we have to sort of feed the mystery a little bit. You learn a little bit more, your questions are answered, but then more questions are posed. And so the stuff with Vault 33 in this episode really fed a lot of that to me. Like, I'm like, oh, I gotta know what's going on, and then what is the meaning behind this this research place that Maximus and Lucy are dropped into, that's a vault? Like, what is going on here? So it's sort of like, it's really keeping me going in that sense.
All that stuff to me was more interesting than sort of like the general MacGuffin chase of Wilzig's head. So
right, yeah. Right. All right. So let's talk about some of the salient points. And again, we're only going to be discussing the stuff that happened in this episode 105, the past, and in previous episodes. We won't discuss plot points ahead of this episode, or if we do, it's going to be totally through speculation, not from having watched ahead. Now, the first scene I think we want to cover tonight is that conflict on the bridge between Titus and Maximus, between Maximus and Lucy and the two fiends.
Yeah, that was just so well done, especially because, you know, Maximus and Lucy just kind of got on board with one another.
Yeah.
And one of the things to realize is she doesn't trust anybody, but, you know, the thing that made her take a shine to Maximus was when she was with the ghoul and with Wilzig trying to escape, Maximus was the guy who stopped it. And so she's wrapped up in this kind of, he's literally a knight in shining armor to her, right? And yeah, his armor doesn't work right now or whatever. But he's got this kind of street smarts that she doesn't, and she's got this kind of book smarts. So what we see is this weird interaction where she's like, okay, hold on. Why don't we all raise our hands? And that's like a trustworthy way to go across this bridge. And he's like, let me just have your gun. She's like, no, we're going to do it this way. And he gives it a shot because he trusts her too, right?
Yeah,
But when the shit hits the fan, he's ready to take those people out. And his aim is as good as her aim in a crazy way, right? Like, he clocked the woman in the neck and he hit the other guy right in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it before either of them could really get a focused shot off because they just got his arm. So just like looking at how Maximus goes from being kind of doofy to being a pretty serious hero in that moment. And a hero not just because he shot people, but a hero because he understood what was going on, right? Just to kind of remind us that Lucy's got the people smarts and everything, but Maximus has that wasteland street smarts, and they're kind of a winning combination. I don't know. What did you guys think of that scene?
You know, it's interesting because one of the things that it underscored for me is that no one trusts anyone out in this wilderness, and Lucy and Maximus come from different dynamics, where Maximus, because he has been with the Brotherhood of Steel all this time, he's been above ground all this time, he understands that there's mistrust in this world, he understands that there's danger in this world. Lucy, having come from the vault, still doesn't quite get it. So while they're both still neophytes in this world, Maximus has a sense of danger through experience of what he's dealt with the world so far that Lucy doesn't quite have, but she's almost there. So she doesn't know what these strangers want or what they... And Maximus is fully aware that these are fiends, which are cannibals. Which, again, another point to that is that it kind of confirms what the ghoul intimated to Lucy about the people in her vault. Like, you know, the ghoul said, like, I bet your daddy had a bib with his neighbor's ass on it. You know, intimating that at some point, even the vaulties may have resorted to cannibals. So that confirms that cannibalism does occur on a regular basis and people eat each other out of desperation.
You know, one thing that's kind of interesting, because, you know, the episode starts off with Lucy being like, hey, I can't trust anyone because everyone has it in
for me.
So
I'm not
gonna, I'm not going to trust you. And then she does allow her knight in shining armor to be the one that can save her and that she trusts. And she kind of is going back into her old pattern of following the golden rule and then realizing, whoa, these people are out to kill us. And, the world looks a lot different than what I was told it would look like or later on in the episode. So it's just quite interesting.
And the whole time, Maximus is lying to her.
Yeah. So Lucy, and they establish this trust right off the bat, right? But still, Maximus can't there's something where he still is not willing to be completely honest with Lucy about his identity. I wonder why that is.
Well, I mean, I think he doesn't want to be vulnerable to her because he sees the respect that she gives to him. But I think also he realized, hey, as soon as I just was vulnerable to someone else who I thought we were creating this familiar bond, I got tricked and I got left to die.
Yeah.
So I can't let that happen again.
I agree with that. He's also lying to her when he gets shot, right?
Right.
He gets shot and he's like, it's just a scratch.
Well, I think part of that is he's putting on a brave face, right? He still wants to feel like the brave hero to Lucy.
And then he's actually scared when she decides to go into the research facility. He's like, I don't want to go in there. And she goes in. Of course, there's a big thing that says medical supplies, and they both get sucked down. He also just openly lies in front of her. He's like, no, we don't have any weapons.
Right.
And then she realizes that she has to be part of the lie. So she hides the gun behind her back, right? So she slides the holster so that it's out of view. And she's like, oh, you're making me part of this lie. I just could have had my hands up. It would have been fine. But then once he has to pull the weapon out of the holster and take down those two fiends, she realizes that his lies were necessary. And that's where she's not at yet. She's happy to drop the MF bomb.
Yeah.
She's happy to, you know, shoot things that are in the way. She's happy to like, you know, get people to do what she thinks is the right thing, but she's not ready to pull that deception out in order to get what she wants or what she needs. And that's like the big difference here. But anyway, I thought that it was a very revealing thing. Also the world building, like, you know, we've heard about fiends before, but then like you're seeing them and how they did it, that woman's smile.
Right. Well, and she clocked that Lucy was from a vault. And I think because of that, she saw that Lucy was easy pickings. Like,
she'd be good eating too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, clean, smooth body. Not full of chemicals. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that Lucy was familiar with the T-60 suit, almost to the extent of Maximus's knowledge of his own suit.
That was my favorite part of that meeting, because when Maximus was talking to Titus, he was like, I see you got the tempered lining. Yeah. And then Lucy like gets in that thing and she's like, oh, the tempered lining. So like Maximus is like, oh, she knows what's going on.
Yeah, even she knows.
It was such a random thing to say that first episode. And then Titus immediately is like, we're going to jump down from here and do all this stuff. So the fact that she like brought that out, and you know, again, there's no way they chose the lining 219 years in. But they're just like geeks about it. They've read about it.
Yeah.
They know about it. You know? Yeah. So it's one of those things.
Where are they getting their where are the Vaulties getting their information about the Brotherhood of Steel, though? That's
question. No, well, the T-60 suit was designed just like, you know, during the war. So they have information on their Pip Boys and their on the servers about the T-60 suit specifically. So that's where she read about it. But the T-60 suit is what the Brotherhood seems to have appropriated for their knights, or at least some of their knights.
I thought it was interesting that according to Maximus, people have told, he said, that's what people say, that have told him that the vaults were populated by monsters. So there's this sort of like common
reverse
rumor about the Vaulties that the Brotherhood of Steel have been perpetuating amongst themselves, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he learned about it from the Brotherhood or before, because it's established that he wasn't always in the Brotherhood.
Right.
But this idea, like, the Vaulties might have perpetuated so that people stayed away from the vaults, you know?
Right. And who's to say?
Yeah.
Who's to say what? I mean, maybe the people in Vaults 31, 32, and 33 are unique in that they are civilized. Maybe other vaults have devolved into monstrous abominations. Who knows? I don't know.
I mean,
yeah,
I think
we'll see.
It could also be a combination of a few things, right? So one is this fear of the other, right? Or the Vaulties were saying stories about the folks on the surface, and the folks on the surface are saying stuff about the Vaulties, and the ghoul, you know, essentially is also saying, hey, we are all the same. We are, you know, not quite as different as we lead each other to believe, because he was human and is now more monstrous. So I think you have that dynamic as being kind of one of the elements of this, like, fear for the others. But I also do think, to a certain extent, the Vaulties, as we saw with, I can't remember the character's name, is Mel, the shop owner. Like, you know, one of the things the Vaulties did is they ran and hide, and they ran and hid from everything that was going on. They bunkered down. They rejected other people from entering their bunkers. And so that in itself is pretty monstrous, right? So they're not all perfect. They, you know, they're trying to have their own society outside the daily concerns that everyone has, and they want to see themselves as this highly enlightened group of people coming to save everyone. But you know, who actually is the savior? Who, you know, I think we've seen in Watchmen where those type of ideals and ideas come to fruition. Who actually is the person watching?
Yeah, totally.
I think it's interesting. Lucy said to Maximus, I come from a place where the world is what you make of it. And then she acknowledges the naivete of the Vaulties, which I think is like, it's like really a sign of her growth as a character. She's growing from idealist to realist. She would not have, you know, before this point in our storyline, Lucy would not have, when she was living in the vault, she would never have acknowledged the naivete of the Vaulties. She would have been just as naive and as they were, and not have known the difference. She's, again, to go back to the allegory of the cave, she's been out of the cave, and now she recognizes that the shadows on the wall are just shadows and not actual people.
Yeah, and she's also been baptized by a bit of fire.
Sure, totally.
So she's no longer in Eden. She's out there, and that's hang on. Oh, she also, you know, if when it comes to the whole like wedding night stuff, you know, that radiation probably took out anything that was growing in her body.
Yeah.
That, or she's going to give birth to a ghoul.
Yeah, I guess we will find out maybe by the end of this season. I think it's interesting that Lucy doesn't believe Maximus when he says the bombs fell when he was a kid, which means that the bombs fell like within the last 20 years or so, when to Lucy's knowledge, the only period of atomic conflict was 200 years ago. So,
which just shows to show how well those vaults are built.
Yeah,
you know, they didn't hear any big bombs being dropped. You know, that's a big deal. But yeah, it just also goes to show that what's going on up there in the wasteland is ongoing conflict. It's not like it happened once and everyone's just recovering. In a solid progressive line, there are steps forward and steps back. I mean, the idea that 34,000 people could live up there
in one
spot, and then all get wiped out, that's, you know, that's, it's not a real good look for humanity.
No. And like Maximus says, it's like people agree that they want to help the world. They just can't decide on how to do it. We did find a little bit out about the Brotherhood of Steel this episode. We're given like tiny little crumbs of Brotherhood of Steel world building. I'm hoping we'll get more before the end of the season. But in their conversation on the bridge, Lucy relays back to Maximus what he told her, which is the Brotherhood uses pre-war tech to find and collect pre-war tech to make sure no one has pre-war tech. So yeah. I thought that was interesting.
Toaster oven.
I think
they want to make sure people don't get toaster ovens.
I guess. I don't know for what reason. I'm hoping that we'll find out more. I thought it was interesting that she remembers playing in the sun with her mom, which caused me to think that maybe what she remembers is actually being outside the vault. Because she says, I remember playing outside in the sun with my mom, but then I realized it was just, you know, my mom's presence that made me feel the warmth or whatever. But I'm thinking maybe there's something more there. Maybe she was actually outside the vault and was too young to remember actually being outside the vault.
Yeah, these those flashback scenes are fully unreliable.
Totally unreliable narrator. That's an excellent way to put it. That's totally what they are, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, when I was six, I mean, I have a six-year-old, and I got to say, he doesn't know what's going on.
Speaking of the vault, let's move down to the vault here for a couple of salient points that I had. So I think it's interesting that in the whole election thing, that there's this saying, when things look glum, vote 31. Like that saying has actually been indoctrinated into the community for generations, right?
Yep.
It's interesting to me that's
not sort of, just I like Ike. It's like no. I like this whole part of our society that I've never been to.
Yes. Let's trust Vault 31 because they know better. But it's sort of like, you know what it kind of reminds me of? This is like a stretch, a little bit of a stretch, but go with me here.
All
right,
I'm stretching.
It's like the Bene Gesserit in Dune. Mm. The Bene Gesserit have for centuries sort of fed this idea of the Kwisatz Haderach, this Messiah will come, and there is no actual Messiah, but they've fed this idea across, they've populated this idea to hundreds of worlds, hundreds of planets all over the place, because they want it to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. So it feels to me like that kind of the same thing, right? Like the idea of trust Vault 31 when things look glum, it sounds to me like something that has a notion that has been instilled from generations past.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they've done that to lay the groundwork for whatever Vault 31's got going on. It's also interesting to me that you know, now we know that all these Vault 31 people have shown up, and that they're all kind of doing, you know, this leadership thing. And we meet Stephanie, and we realize that Stephanie too is from Vault 31.
Yeah.
And when she's asked about Vault 31, she's mums the word.
The first thing out of her mouth is, "Well, what did your dad say about that?"
Exactly.
She wants to get her story straight before she tells what she thinks.
Exactly. And you know, the woman Betty, who's the overseer, she's older.
Yeah.
And then you know, McLean, the last overseer, he was kind of like late middle age, I guess. And then Betty, who's also 31, she's kind of like early in life. You know, mm-hmm, she's probably 30, mm-hmm, something like that. So maybe younger. So it's kind of like they keep on seeding people over during this triennial, you know, trade thing. And is, you know, Stephanie next in line to become overseer? It's just incredible.
Oh, how, interesting.
Know. I mean, you can see her ability to kind of hold on to the sort of like Lord of the Flies, potentially a little bit of Animal Farm nature that gets riled up based off of the events in the sort of first episode. And you see her being one of the real aggressive individuals fighting back, right? While there's quite a lot of people who are just scared or running, just allowing themselves to get
killed. Right, the two guys who were running for overseer, they were nowhere to be found. But meanwhile, she took a fork to the eye and she's like, I'm defending this spot against you jerks. Mm-hmm.
So right. It makes you question exactly who are these people or how they came to be. Part of it makes me wonder if could they, you know, be like surface folks who made themselves vaultees and now are kind of, you know, have been the law of the land for a while.
That's an interesting theory.
I don't know, but I do think that the timeline is surprising because Vault 32, we know they fell apart 2 years ago. And we also know that this triennial trade. So it could be that Vault 31 was working with, I don't know, was working on Vault 30 and like 29 on the other side of their situation, while being unaware of what was going on with Vault 32 until they found out that somebody died. But, you know, like McLean was like, oh, I was sorry to hear the Overseer died. But the fact that that happened 2 years ago, but they only trade every 3 years, and Stephanie was married to Bert and she came from over there, that means that she probably came during that last trade. So she doesn't have any cousins out there, so she can hook up with Chet.
Sure, sure.
And she's bringing that new genetic material into the space, but she's polished, you know?
Sure.
She's violent, yeah, sure, yeah. But she's also very polished. So it's almost as if they've been, you know, they've been trained from birth to be seeded out to the different vaults. And sort of carpetbag their way into leadership.
I have a theory about that that I want to mention in the big picture section later on. Sure. But what I do want to also mention is that so it's very clear that there is some deception going on with the vaults. Like the first instance of that is that that Lucy. It's clear that when Lucy encounters the civilization up on top, was it Shifting Sands or Sunny Sands? I can't remember what it was.
I mean the new California Republic
stuff. Yeah, that its entire existence runs counter to what she believed was the vault's purpose, to restart civilization once it was safe. So it means to her, the idea of Reclamation Day was a total lie, because there has already been, civilization has already been reclaimed. It was already reclaimed and then destroyed.
Yeah. Which means that if they came up during Reclamation Day, are they ready? Do they have what it takes to start a new population, to start a new colony, to be listened to by the people who are up there?
Right.
You know, they're not going to end up, you know, if all the Vaulties came upstairs, they can end up just as dead as anybody else, you know?
I think it's interesting that...
And who knows if it also, one last thing.
Yeah.
Who knows if the new California Republic wasn't started by a series of vaults who had a differently scheduled Reclamation Day?
Oh, you're blowing my mind right now with this idea.
Yeah. So like if you're vault tech, you're like, okay,
yeah,
we're going to try... 100 years out, based on radiation levels, whatever. 200 years out, 300 years out. We have plenty of vaults. We have at least 33 of them.
Yeah.
And we're going to keep on trying to reclaim the surface, and we'll see what happens.
I feel like that kind of falls in line with the storyline in the game franchise, because I feel like those games don't all occur in the same timeline. So I think
they don't happen all at the same time. Right? They happen like a little earlier, a little later.
Yeah. So you may be onto something there.
Well, it also makes sense with the scientists talking about, oh, we tried this and we tried that. You know, they're doing all these case studies. They are trying
the enclave,
you know, different suicide methods, for everything else. So it could also make sense that this is just another of those tests.
Could be just the world is a giant social experiment to the enclave, you know, or whoever runs Vault Tech. I thought it was interesting that Betty claims that the vaults are separated to prevent the spread of threats, which may be true, but
divide and rule, divide and conquer.
Yeah, there may be more there. I don't know. And also she claims to have buried Lucy's mom, along with his dad. But
it's nuts to me that they buried her with her Pip-Boy, considering the fact that, like, Lucy's like, you have real cotton, and they're sharing a wedding dress. You're going to take that hardware and bury it together?
Yeah. Actually, it didn't even occur to me that maybe the Pip-Boy might have come off of the buried corpse.
Right. Or even just like, why wouldn't you just take if you knew the Pip-Boy could open up the vault from the outside?
Yeah.
Why don't you just take it with you and bring it back home?
It's a security issue.
And also, it's a security issue. And a lot of resources go into that thing, right? It's got all it's a computer. So, bring it back home and use it for somebody. It's just wild.
And the last salient point that I wanted to bring up was I thought it was interesting that in that Vault-Tec, the Hawthorne Medical Research and Development Facility that's owned by Vault-Tec, that they go in there, they stumble on thinking it's a place where they might find some medical supplies. I was fascinating that the power is still on, and not only is the power on, but the lights seem to direct towards that supply closet, which happened to be a Trompe-l'Oeil trap, you know, had the painted door and the handle. So it's clearly a trap. And I thought it was really interesting that, like, if I walked in there and I saw lights that were still on and that were directing me towards one place, that would be a huge red flag. I don't care what the potential, what potentially could be behind the door. I would be on high alert about that.
Yeah, yeah, well, I mean, you aren't as naive as our two main characters are.
It's true.
Got those LA street smarts. I do think, though, that we were in Super Duper Mart, and Super Duper Mart had power, right? They were watching television.
Yeah.
And she walked in, and there was, like, some weirdly, like, eerie seats for kids or whatever. So I do think it's not unheard of to have power in these buildings, especially because if the T-60 suit has a fusion core, which is available, then, you know, you can have, like, a fusion core serving a couple buildings' lights.
I see. Any other salient points before we move on to our next section here?
You know, we're talking about games yesterday, and the medical facility is just another one of those places where you can walk up and say, oh, maybe there's some power-ups inside.
Totally. It's a side quest. So, it's a side quest slash...
Yeah, it's a side quest.
You know, resource...
resource hunting, Depot. Yeah. That's what they're doing. They're looking for, like, a stim pack for him or something.
All right, I've got a couple of unanswered questions. So it seems to me, like, have there been multiple apocalypses? Is that the plural of apocalypse? Apocalypses?
Yeah, I'll be okay with that. Yeah, and I think, yes, the answer is yes. I think people have tried to bring things back.
Yeah.
And somehow, some way, it's been blown up. Or, you know, it could be that when the new California Republic was starting, Vault-Tec was like, oh, no, this world is ours. We're going to bomb you. You know, who else has bombs like that?
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. So, yes. So clearly Lucy's, what she's been told is wrong, and what Maximus has experienced is correct, that there have been multiple apocalypses throughout history. And the other big question I have, which I'm sure will be answered in future episodes, is has Lucy actually been in the outside before? Was her memory
the surface,
of the surface, you know, faulty or factual? All right, let's get into the big picture section. And I have some speculation here. And again, I have not watched ahead of this episode, so I don't know if this is true or not. But this is kind of the vibe that I'm getting. What if the management, the administration of the vaults, is aware of the inevitable failure of the vault system, and they just keep moving vaulties back and forth between 32 and 33 every time there's a societal collapse, like we've seen with 32 collapsed, and 33 discovers it, and then Betty's decision, once she's elected overseer of 33, is to divide the civilization once again. And some,
it's like mitosis.
Totally.
Have it grow.
What?
Yeah.
But here's another thing that will blow your mind. What if there really isn't even a Vault 31, but its sole existence is just a ruse to control the other vaults? Like, what if these people
who came from Vault 31, there's not actually a Vault 31. Where, what are they? Like, how do they have all these resources? To do things like fix up Vault 32.
I mean, that's a good question, and maybe it's connected to this, like, Hawthorne Medical Labs that is clearly a trap that ingests people from the above ground into the vault system.
Mm-hmm. Also, but here's another thing.
Yeah.
Anything that's on the surface has, like, a radiation signature.
So this is true. This is true.
The people who are... So if Lucy's dad and, you know, you know, Betty and Stephanie were all like actually surface dwellers, they'd have a radiation signal on them from the moment they got
this
in.
This is true. This is a good point. Hadn't thought about that. Interesting.
I do think that 31 is likely to exist. It's just one of these vaults is not like the others, you know?
For sure.
And 31 is basically breeding people to go lead the others.
Ah, interesting. Well, I mean, that's like just
minority rule kind of thing.
That just brings up more questions than it does answers. But hopefully these things will be answered in future episodes. Dwayne, do you have any big picture subjects to bring up?
Yeah, just like Lucy and Maximus have a wonderful balance of innocence and trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're comparing notes over the last 200 years. Each of their understandings of history is flawed and like tinged by indoctrination.
Yep.
And, you know, as much as they're innocent, there's trauma. Lucy doesn't lost her mother. Maximus was in a blast that like made him an orphan.
Right.
And they still maintain this innocence. And while Lucy is book smart, and we know all the Vaulties are book smart because when it came to talking about what to do with the inmates, they were like, oh, they need to learn Kant.
You know sure. what I mean? but not only book smart, but also agile. Like she's proven her agile. Right,
so she's physical.
She's
physical too. But then there's also just this idea that, you know, between the Kant and stuff, she's reading like whatever War and Peace with her father.
Right.
So she is book smart. And she's got like physicality. But Maximus is street smart. He knows what's up. He knows, what to say, what not to say, and how to take care of baddies if you can. I think that was pretty powerful. And when with the New California Republic, 34,000 citizens, Lucy's like, what happened? And Maximus says, it's the same thing that always happens. Everyone wants to save the world. They just disagree on how, which is what you were saying earlier.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that felt like the most true thing across the planet. You know,
it's kind of a universal sentiment from time immemorial, right?
I wonder if anyone survived, she said. And he goes, I did.
Yeah.
So that's that's crazy. Yeah.
Tears for fears.
But yeah, that's my whole big picture.
All right. So let's talk about some technical aspects, behind the scenes elements we enjoyed in this episode: music, acting, visual effects, etc.
I just love seeing the 100-year-old infrastructure that we currently have being represented as 200, 300-plus-year-old decrepit backdrop of this series, right? There's the overpass where Lucy and Maximus meet, and that, you know, where Thaddeus and Maximus had their falling out. There's the bridge, which is just like another 100-year-old thing that trains probably still ride all over. And there are the vaults, which are, you know, I don't know if they're nuclear silos or whatever, but they built the vaults sets. But it looks like, you know, there might have been actually something they were filming in that wasn't that. So
these are like
just incredible.
In this world, these are like the equivalent of like the Parthenon or the pyramids, right? They're just these really old things in context to 200 plus years of continuous atomic decimation. So that's going to do it for this episode of Vault 33. I'm going to go around the table. I'll start with you, Dwayne, and ask, where can people find your work on the internet when you're not talking about Fallout on Amazon Prime?
Twitter.com/DwayneD. Tosin, what about you?
On Instagram, it's burnttoast45. What about yourself, Andy?
My X/Twitter handle is Mr. Babyman. You can find everything I'm liking and linking there. Our Twitter handle is Fallout Vault 33. We're on all the major podcast distribution networks. Add us, tell your friends. And join us next time when we cover the 6th episode of Fallout entitled The Trap. I'm excited about that. I'm going to watch that tomorrow. Until then, please tweet us and leave us a comment on iTunes, and we will see you soon.
Why don't you crawl up to the phone?